with Love Divorce, episode 1.
Good job, baby. Suit up, y'all. We finna go to war with insecurity. Let's go. Everybody, thank you for tuning in. This is With Love Divorce, the podcast, episode 1. This podcast, we are calling With Love Divorce Insecurity. And so we're so excited to be here with you. I want to first say thank you so much for allowing me into your homes, into your hearts, into your marriages, into your relationships, and even into your divorce. This is a 100% safe space. And when I say a safe space, I mean anything that you email me, anything that you inbox me, no one will know your business. If you will allow me, I will share any advice that will help someone else. But I want you to know that I am so thankful and I do not take it lightly. That you have even decided to listen to me for any reason, even if it's just 5 people. The fact that you have taken time out of your schedule, even if you're quarantined, honey, because honestly, working from home is not easy, especially if you're essential staff. I don't know why they're playing. But you've taken time out of your schedule to listen to someone that you don't know. You don't know my full story. You don't know much about me, but you think that I might have something to share with you. And so I honor that. I take it seriously. I want you to know that I pray every time I record. And I've recorded a few times, and I've recorded this episode several times. So I wanted you to know that I pray. I ask God for guidance. And so I just want to say thank you. So this podcast was created to help you suit up. So that's our little tagline, suit up, you know. And so when I say that, I really mean the fact that we are going forward to break chains. And these are generational chains, these generational curses, these are trauma bonds, these are, you know, generational trauma in our lives. Like, breaking those chains are tough. Like, it is tough to go back in time, right? And to break the curses off of our lives, to break the bondage, to break ourselves away from the bondage. And when we do that, it's work. It's war. And I always say suit up because I think about the full armor of God, and the helmet seems to be a pretty important piece of the armor. But when I think about the helmet, I think about that is where all of, I mean, that's the most important part of your body, right? That's what your head is, the most important part of your body. And that is where all of your other brain gets its information. I mean, all of your other parts of your body, sorry, gets its information. And what's really important is that we protect it with everything that we have. And so I'm excited because I get to share my experiences with you, but I also get to share my professional experience with you. And so I have learned something along the way, both in my personal life as well as in my professional life. And I've come up with these 5. So I want to explain this to you. So it's not that I realized this on my own. It's just that I came up with a cute way to say it. And it's really not, you know, that serious, but it is a good way to say it. So trauma affects the way you perceive. And so that's what you see. Receive, that's how you process information. Believe, that's your judgments and your decisions. Relieve, so that's going to be your trauma response, right? And, or your, you know, how you ease pain or temporarily extend joy. And how you achieve, and that could be achieving or accomplishing goals, your follow through. If you've ever found yourself in a stagnant place, trauma affects your ability to move. And, you know, after I'm done taping this podcast, I want to tell you just a little bit about that particular piece right there. It's going to be interesting. So I want to get started. You know, this is how I came up with this one for the first episode is interesting. I got off of social media for a little bit, and I did that so that I could focus on what I was doing. This information that I've been, you know, collecting for some time came to me, you know, while separated from my then husband and, you know, while in the middle of our divorce. And the steps that I had created, I started to use, and I felt that they were working. And so I'm like, wow, this could be something big. And so I really prayed about it. And when the new year broke, I really had an awakening. And hopefully, you know, one day I'll be able to share that with all of you. So I got off of Facebook, I got off of Instagram, I got off of everything, right? And when Coronita, when she came into town and was like, y'all go home, when she sent us to our rooms, I quickly started, you know, just kind of like scrolling. This is just every now and again, not paying too much attention to what was going on online because I was really trying to protect my peace, right? I keep telling you, it's important. Your brain, it's important. What you think is important. What you hear, what you see is important. And so I happened to be scrolling one day and I saw this meme, and I don't even remember following this person. This is a famous minister, seems pretty famous. Some of my my followers and some of my friends from different places that I've lived, you all follow her. And I'm actually looking at some of your names right now. You like this actual picture. And so I saw this and I want to know what you think. I'm going to tell you what I think. But so the meme says, you can't be a woman of God and a side chick at the same time. Now, men, don't check out, because this podcast is for everyone. But I was taken aback. And so, why was I taken aback? Okay, so I've never been a side chick. So I'm like, I had to think, why are you annoyed, Shaplay? That ain't none of your business. And so as I thought through that process, like, oh, Shaplay, what is wrong with you? Why are you mad? I started thinking, you know, okay, I'm actually starting to see what's going on here. Posting this, right, says more about the person than it does about the group of people that she's talking about. It says more about the person and those laughing at it than it does the broken people they're making fun of. And so there was this, there was a famous person, a musician, singer, who used to be a part of a pretty famous group, that replied, listen, with several exclamation points, and wrote LOL, LOL, L, and thought it was just incredibly funny. And so again, it got me thinking, what is going on? And I started to to really process that. And I said, you know what's going on? It's insecurity. That's what it is. That's all that I could surmise, because the statement in and of itself isn't a true statement. And so I want to walk with you on this journey to kind of figure out a few things, right? And we're gonna talk a little bit about it, but we're also going to talk about insecurity in and of itself and just how it affects us and our relationships, but how it also affects us in our ministry. And when I say our ministry, you don't have to be a believer to have a ministry, right? Or to have a brand. Let's call it that. So if you're a believer, we'll call it a ministry, right? But if you're not a believer, then we'll call it a brand. You cannot be a person who allows insecurity to affect your brand, allows insecurity or allows your trauma, your past trauma, whatever is coming forward for you to affect your ministry or your brand. And so let's get into that. And so when I was, you know, coming, when I was coming up, I'm still coming up, still becoming. But when I think about it, I want to dispel a myth. You know, I've always thought that insecurity meant jealousy. Or, you know, I like, oh, this person is just jealous, honey. And so I'm like, I've always thought, you know, when people come to me, they're always like, you know, this person was hating, or I've told people things and they're like, oh, don't worry, that person is just jealous. And I've never really understood like what they could be jealous of. Anybody who truly knows me knows I always ask like, well, why? Because this person has this and this person has that going for them and they have this, because I'm like, they're beautiful and they have this. And so the problem is insecurity and jealousy are not the same. We often see symptoms, right? And you know what? Perfect example, coronavirus, right? Coronavirus, where everyone is searching for the symptoms of coronavirus, right? We are looking online. It's like one of the top, you know, search items in the Google search engine, symptoms of coronavirus. And when we see that, we are looking for what indicates an infection, that we have this infectious disease that may kill us, right? And so I thought about that and I'm like, you know, jealousy is not the infection. Insecurity is the infection, while jealousy is the symptom. And so I wonder why we can't see that in our relationships and in our friendships, why we can't see that in our workplace. Why is it that when we are offended, we don't see the infection, we see the symptom. We don't see their pain, we see our pain. Because if we're honest, if we're truly honest, if we take a step back and we make a decision, a conscious decision in the moment to see the pain of someone else, because we are inherently selfish, right? That's just the way we were born. And so if we take a step back and we say, hey, okay, so let me think about this, because this might not be about me. This might actually be about the other person. We may be able to see through what's happening in front of us and see behind that mask, right? We may be able to see the infection instead of the symptom, and we may be able to help treat the infection. And not that we're therapists, not that we have the cure, but sometimes love will turn away wrath. Sometimes love will calm the situation down. And so if we're able to see beyond that, and be humble and show love and not think of ourselves, we may be able to get to a deeper part of the person and lead them on a journey to healing, or we may be able to see beyond what's happening in front of us and heal our marriages, heal our relationships with our mothers, our fathers, our children, their fathers, their mothers. And so I want to go just a little bit deeper. And so, you know, when I think of insecurity, I think about what comes from that, right? So it's like a lack of confidence. And so when I think of a lack of confidence, I think of, you know, if I hurt you, because it comes out in different ways, but one thing that I thought of was, if I hurt you so that I can feel better about myself, the belief is, because we're, you know, when we do this, like, it's more of a projection, right? And so if I hurt you, the belief is that I can dim your light, right? And so if I dim your light, then maybe your light will just be a bit dimmer than mine. And then mine can shine a little bit brighter because I don't have that confidence within myself to do that on my own. And it's not something that is thought of consciously, right? It's not something that people go around and think, like, I'm going to dim their light today because I can't do it on my own. I can't just be bright on my own. No one, not that I know of, no one thinks like that. They actually just do it because in that moment, that is what's satisfying their trigger. Then I think about perfection, right? And so it's like, oh, I can be a perfectionist. Actually, I had a review at my job and you know, my boss said that I'm a bit of a perfectionist and that if I didn't stop trying to be a perfectionist, that I was going to burn out. And she tried my life. And I love you, but you try my life, Mia. Anyway, but I get it. I am a perfectionist. Reason why I'm recording this for a third time. And I promise myself, I don't care how many times I mess up today, this one gonna stick. But this idea of perfectionism, when you are a perfectionist with insecurity, right, you feel worthless. You feel like you are absolutely and positively so wrong that nothing that you do after you've messed up is correct, right? So you'll delete the entire podcast and say, all of it was horrible. Get rid of all of it. I'm just going to record it again, right? But then there are perfectionists, when you think about projection, there are perfectionists that will manipulate others into believing that they are wrong so that they never have to deal with being corrected themselves. They never have to deal with facing the fact that they could possibly be wrong themselves. And that could come from a myriad of things. When they were younger, they could have been told that they were stupid. They could have been told by their parents that, you know, they weren't smart enough. They weren't good enough. They could have been, you know, the sibling that wasn't, you know, treated right. There's so many different things. But what does that turn into? What does that show us? That shows us gaslighting, right? Manipulation starts to happen. Like I said, projection. And so what I'm saying is a symptom of insecurity and perfectionism. What does that look like? What is a symptom of that? A symptom of that is abuse. And it may not always be physical abuse. It may just be emotional abuse. It may just be psychological. And so let's go a little bit further. So fear failure. So I can't fail if I don't try, right? I've heard that a gazillion times. Or a fear of rejection. And you can't hurt me if I don't try. That's all over Instagram. Or I'm not going to let you hurt me. I'm going to hurt you before you hurt me. I've seen that a gazillion times, right? And so insecurity, like we were just saying, can turn into anxiety, aggression, abuse, competition. Competition within a marriage. Woo! That's another podcast. I'm definitely going to talk about that. And I'll talk about my own marriage as it relates to that as well. Bitterness, resentment, jealousy, silence, conscious silence. We are definitely going to talk about that one day. And yes, even cheating. And so I want to say a little something before I get into this next part. So I want to tell you a little bit about something that I thought of about conscious partnership and conscious alliance. And what I'll say to the singles is that whatever decision you make about partnership, it needs to be a decision that comes from your healed self and not your wound. Because our wounds cause us to choose partners that, that we won't be properly aligned with, right? We won't be able to be in conscious partnership with, because you can be in partnership with anyone. I mean, I'm in partnership with people at my job as we speak. And I mean, it's a partnership, but that doesn't mean that we cool. That doesn't mean that we are one, right? And so I want you to think about that. And so conscious partnership and conscious alliance. And what do I mean by that? And so when I think about that, partnership is a merger of individual interests for mutual profit, while alliance is a collaboration between between sovereign interests for mutual profit. So that's, when I think of a merger, I think of two things becoming one. Right. And when I think of a collaboration, I think of, you know, DC3 and TI on Soldier. That was like a banger, right? Everybody remember that. Or a collab. Jay-Z and Beyonce, Crazy in Love. That's my generation. So that's a collaboration, right? And so they at that point, they were in an alliance. I mean, now, though, Jay-Z and Beyonce are in a conscious partnership. And so when I think of an alliance, I often think of a divorce. My ex-husband and I are in a conscious alliance, meaning we are together. We collaborate together because we have sovereign interests, right? We each have these beautiful children. And we want things for them, and they may be a little different, right? But we want, overall, we have the same kind of, you know, thought pattern for them. But it's a mutual profit, because we know that what we each one of us want what's best for them, right? And it might not be exactly the same, but we want what's best. And the profit is that we're going to raise these beautiful children to do good things, to be great people. That's the goal, right? And so when we come in a conscious alliance, because we have to make that decision every day, even when I'm annoyed with him and even when he's annoyed with me, because it goes both ways. I get on his nerves more than I'd like to admit. And I know it. And ditto, my brother, ditto. So conscious alliance, conscious partnership. And so when we walk into a relationship with individual interests or trauma, and we're working towards a mutual profit, it's bound to be a bumpy ride, right? But that's okay, because I always tell people that there are situations in the Bible that we can point to and say, I see, they had that problem too, because that's what I had to do. I had to, and I often say, I had to break the chains off of my biblical ancestors so that I could break the chains off of my trauma, right? Off of my issues, off of my mind. And so I want to talk about our good Abraham and Sarah, all right? So let's get into this, right? So these individual interests or these individual traumas, let's start there. Abraham or Abram, because that's where we were in chapter 12, right, in Genesis. Abram versus Abram. So he had insecurities, right? The head of this family, he had insecurities about his ability, right? His seed. When he left his father's house to go into a land that he ain't know, because God was like, get up, go, but I ain't gonna tell you where you're going, but go that way, over there. He left when he was 75 and he had no children. Sarai left when she was 65, but she got up and she went with her man, right? And she was 65, she had no children, but they each had insecurities, and their insecurities were about their ability. His about his seed and hers about her infertility. So when we get to chapter 10 and we get to verse 10, I'm like, y'all couldn't even make it out of the chapter without a problem. Y'all already got issues. So I'm like, okay. So we get to Egypt and Abram turns to Sarai and he's like, do me this solid, sis. And she's like, sis. I mean, I know I'm your sis, but like, sis, like, because I'm your wife too, but like, sis, bear with me, I do this. And he's like, yeah, sis, just tell him you're my sister. You know what I'm saying? Tell him you're my sister, because if you tell him you're my sister, it'll save me. Now, I know about this scripture. I've heard this in church, right? I grew up in church, so I've heard this. And I'm like, why am I now annoyed? Like, I know I am annoyed because life happened, right? And so I'm like, hold on. If I was his wife and he turned to me and said, I need you to protect me so they don't take my life, I would look at him like he's crazy, because yes, I do want to protect my man, right? I'm with it, but we finna do it together. I know for goodness, you did not just ask me to protect you when I don't know what would happen to me. Where is my protection? So you expect me to go into a place where I don't know if I'll be raped. I don't know if I'll be killed. I don't know if I'll be taken as a slave. I don't know what's going to happen to me. But that's what he asked of her. And so she does that. And it's never spoken about. Sarah never mentions it. But I know, I've been a wife, so I know she looked at him cray. I know she did. So I'm looking and I'm like, okay. So we get to chapter 14 and I'm reading and I'm like, hold up. Lot's in trouble. And he gets 318 of his best men. And he goes to war for Lot. And I said, now, ain't this something? Two chapters ago, you just asked a single woman to protect you. Two chapters later, you get 318 men to go and protect Lot. That there is interesting to me. And as a woman, as a wife, I would feel a way about that. And so I think about that. I'm like, man, because my insecurities, right, are exacerbated by trauma. And if you think about your relationships, you come into these relationships with your individual traumas and your individual insecurities. And then something happens, an offense happens. My uncle used to preach, well, he preached this message, and I'll never forget it. He said, be offended. The name of the message was, be offended, but don't take offense. And when you are when you are a victim of trauma, right? And we don't know much about, you know, Sarai's life at this time. But I'm bringing it back to us. As a victim of trauma, things change in your brain. The way you see, what you perceive, how you act, all of those things change. And so in 2020, I'm looking at that like, I know he just did it. So now that's going to change my behavior. Because not only am I thinking that my husband will not protect me, and he's put me in a position where I must protect him. But if I must protect him, that means I now have to protect me. And if I now have to protect me and him, right? And he told me that God told us to do what? Okay, so now I got to protect the promise, right? So I'm going through it and I'm looking and I'm like, man, so what's the new insecurity? Because when you exacerbate trauma, right? I mean, when trauma exacerbates insecurity, you wind up with a new insecurity. And so I'm looking and I'm like, wow, what's the new insecurity? And here it goes. The new thing that happens is that Abraham, he's restructured in his position. He literally went from the head to the neck. Because right after that happens, Sarai puts herself in the position and the head position to make decisions. Sarai says to herself and to him eventually that, bruh, I got this because apparently I'm the one who protects this family. So, Hagar, I need you to go sleep with my husband. I need you to become his little boo thing because he heard from God. And what he's saying is seemingly impossible because I don't know if you knew how old I was and I don't know if you knew how old he was, but I don't think that's finna happen. So I'm going to need you to go sleep with my husband because he obviously don't know what he's talking about. So go ahead. And so there's this new, so her, she's insecure, right? And what is she insecure about? She becomes insecure about her importance. And why does she become insecure about her importance? Because she sends Hagar in there and she immediately regrets it. Because, I mean, I believe that Hagar was a baddie. I'm just going to say that. I believe Hagar was a baddie. And Hagar was not only a baddie, but Hagar probably had Abraham's attention or Abram's attention at the time. Hagar had Abram's attention. And then Hagar was pregnant with Abram's child. So her importance, Sarai's importance has now changed, right? And so what's her response to that, right? What's Sarah or Sarai's response, her trauma response to all of these things happening around her? She's bruised emotionally. She has these insecurities. They're exacerbated by trauma. She has a new insecurity. She's like all of these things. What is her response? She's like, how about I'm just going to treat Hagar like the little heifer that she is? And so I think to myself, you know, when I saw Sarai acting that way, you know, when I was a kid, I just immediately thought like, oh, she's horrible. She did that to herself. But as I got older, I'm like, no, she did that. When Sarai did that, she was making this. I'm not excusing her decisions. I'm saying that there's a reason for everything. And when we look at our spouses and we look at our partners and we look at the, you know, the people that we were in relationship with, all of the choices that they make are coming from a place, right? And it's up to us, yes, even in your divorce, to figure out what's going on there. And why is that important? Because you are still raising humans together if you have children. You're still raising people together. And so you still have to have a relationship, right? Because your ego and their ego doesn't really matter because you have children. And so I'm just like, oh man, this is crazy. So we keep going and, you know, Hagar has this baby, this beautiful baby boy, Ishmael, and, you know, everything's okay. And, you know, I can only imagine that Abram, you know, is in, you know, Hagar's tent, and they're laughing and they're joking and they're chilling. And, you know, then Genesis 20 comes and Abraham turns to Sarah and looks at her again and says, "Hey, Sarah, tell this man, new person, you're my sister, because they might think that you're so beautiful and they'll think that you're my wife and they'll hurt me." And I'm thinking, Britt, you still think that? At this point, Sarah's about 90. I'm trying to figure out what fountain of youth she was drinking from. Okay? Like, she couldn't have been that cute at 90. But I mean, okay, I'm gonna give it to you, because I mean, this was like, you know, back in the day. So maybe she didn't, you know, maybe she had access to other stuff. I don't know. She was putting juices and berries all over her face. I don't really know. Listen, she must have been a baddie. So I'm looking and I'm like, that's crazy. Okay. So not only does this other woman have your child, but now again, you're putting me before everyone. And I now have to do this again. And so, yeah, I couldn't have been Sarah. So we go a little further, and Sarah finally has Isaac. And so isn't that interesting? When you finally get what you want, right? When you are married or when you are in a relationship, and that blessing or maybe that business that you all were building together, you finally get that together. You finally get what you want. You finally get the business started, right? How sweet is it after you have allowed all of your traumas and all of your insecurities to infiltrate your marriage and blow it up? Is it really that sweet anymore? And so when you're holding this blessing in your hands, you find that you have a brand new insecurity, especially when it's a baby. And if you're sitting at home now in the middle of coronavirus and you're sheltered at home and you can't leave, and you're sitting there with a newborn baby and a marriage, looking at your spouse thinking, I now have insecurities about my future, based on everything that has happened before I got pregnant or before this person had this baby. Like, that's real, right? That's real. I remember being that person. I was that person after getting pregnant with my daughter. And it's such a scary place to be. It's a scary place to be because you know you want to build a future for your child with the person that you had this child with, but you also know somewhere deep inside that this probably isn't gonna last if we don't fix it. And so Abraham now has insecurities about his future. Sarah has insecurities about her future. And because she has insecurities about her future, she looks at Hagar and she's like, yeah, they gotta go because they can't share in the promise. And so Abraham had to give up the woman that he loved because he loved Hagar. I don't care what anybody, I don't care what the Instagram and YouTube and Facebook theologians will have to say about this. Abraham loved Sarah. You're not going to tell me that he didn't. He had a child who was about 13 years old when this happened with this woman, spent all of this time with this woman. Of course he loved her. I can imagine him spending time with her and then knowing like each other's deepest, darkest secrets and the fears. And I'm sure he was talking about Sarah and her bitter self. I'm sure he was in there like, oh God, let me go see what she wants. Was it good? No, he shouldn't have been doing that, but I'm sure that's what was happening. And so he has to give up this woman that he loves because he wants to be obedient. And then Hagar leaves with Ishmael, and he has to give up his son. Let's not forget that. That's his son. It's his first born seed. And so he brings Isaac up to Mount Moriah. And again, the IG theologians and the Facebook theologians and the YouTube theologians are probably going to have a problem with what I'm going to say. But the Bible says that he was a lad. So anywhere that we see that he's a lad, and I've looked up, you know, the definitions, I've done some research. I've done my research before I came up on here. He had to be, whatever you argue, however you argue, however old you argue that he was less than 18, right? And so after Mount Moriah, the Bible says that Abraham moved to Beersheba, and that Sarah lived in Hebron. And that told me that for 20 years, about 20 years of their marriage, they did not live in the same place. And if you go one chapter over, you'll find that Abraham wasn't even there when his wife died. When Sarah died, Abraham wasn't there. He was in Beersheba. And so that only makes me think even more, right? When these two people, before they went on their journey, before anything, they were married, right? And things must have been just going along. And when they started out on this journey, and Abraham and his insecurities and trauma, and Sarah and her insecurities and trauma, when they came together and they got on that path of adding trauma to their insecurities and creating new insecurities because of the trauma, that caused resentment, that just made their problems worse. And when you do that, when you make these mountains, right, these mountains of trauma out of histories of trauma, there's no other way. We think that there's no other way but to live separately, or to divorce or depart. And so what could have happened to change the trajectory of this experience? I mean, Sarah, honestly, in the beginning, one thing that could have happened is Abraham could have said, no, if God told me to do this, I know that God will look out for me. So whatever happens here, I'm going to tell him who you are in Egypt from the very beginning. If that didn't happen, Sarah could have went to him and said, hey, you know, that hurt me when you did that. And they could have had an honest discussion. But what I noticed is that they didn't really talk about the way that they felt. At least the Bible didn't say anything about that. And so where was the communication? Abraham didn't really say anything about it. I can tell you that. Abraham walked around in conscious silence. And we'll definitely talk about that in another podcast, about how men walk in conscious silence. And so with the few minutes that I have left, I do want to talk about how your insecurities can disrupt your brand, or how your insecurities can blow up your ministry. And I think it's really important to just say that most people, most celebrities think of one person leaving their brand as not that serious, but the kingdom, the Bible says that one lamb, or one soul that is lost is like 100. And so it is important. And so I want to address that. Why did this even come up for me? And so I can tell you this, being in the situations that I've been in, and being as low as I've been, I've looked to different gospel artists or different celebrities or different people online or whatever to kind of just help me go along, right, in my darkest times. And so I have been that person who will see something and be completely turned off. I think the difference between myself and maybe someone else is that I grew up in the church and, you know, whole train up a child in the way that they should go, when they're old, they won't depart. But there are other people who didn't grow up in this. You know, I'm not new to this. I grew in this, right? But other people are not in that way. And so when I saw this meme, it really, really annoyed me because it brought up this whole memeology versus theology thing for me. And I can't wait to talk about that too. Because as a minister, I'm looking and I'm like, okay, so let me just look at what else she posts, right? And I'm looking and I'm like, this is the most contradictory page I've ever seen in my life. Because first you post that, right? You post, you can't be a side chick and the woman of God at the same time. But then you also post, don't worry about what nobody has to say about you. Keep doing you. And then you post a bunch of other stuff about the same thing. And I just thought that was interesting. And so it told me that this person is posting just to post, just to get followers, just to get attention, just to get your money, because she has a book coming out. I said, well, hey now. All right. Well, that there goes that. But people are just going to keep posting. People are just going to keep following. But I also do want to address this because I'm like, okay, well, let's if we're going to break down the truth, if we're going to like stuff, we have to qualify it, right? And so let's think about it. How true is that statement? I mean, I thought about the woman at the well, right? Because the woman at the well was a side chick. You know, Jesus said to her, you know, it's true that you don't have a husband. And, you know, because you have five husbands and the man that you with right now ain't your man. And she was like, she clutched her pearls and was like, but who told you that? So like, I think to myself, you know, she left that well and she became a minister. She literally went out into ministry. And so then I thought to myself, but hold up. My Bible tells me, now, you know, I pulled it up, right? And I said, well, let me go ahead and sign it here. I said, my Bible tells me in Romans 8:29-30 that for whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among his brethren. Glory. Because you remember, Jesus had no reason to be in Samaria. Come on now, because it wasn't none of his people in Samaria, but we're going to keep going. Moreover, whom he predestined, come on, predestined, he also called. Whom he called, these he also justified, and whom he justified, he also glorified. And so, you know, I'm a Jesus freak. I'm a Bible nerd. So I was like, let me look up some definitions because that's what we do. So I said, okay, foreknew. Foreknew means he had prior knowledge of. Predestined means that he decided beforehand. So that means this has already happened before the side chick thing happened. Okay, so that means if you were this before the side chick thing happened, that means you're the same thing at the same time. But I mean, you know, who am I? And then it said that he justified them. That means he rendered them righteous. Glory. And then it said he glorified him. That means he celebrated them. And I just really felt like, wow, who are you to tell anybody who they can be? And then I thought, you don't even know what that person is going through. Because as a minister, a minister who ministers to broken hearts, is it not your job to look at someone's brokenness and think, why are you so broken that you feel that you have to be second best? Why are you so broken that you feel you must be hidden? What happened to you? Where is that coming from? Can I help you? Can I show you? Can I lead you? Can I model for you? Can I show you what it means to have love as Christ loves the church? Because that's what should be happening. You should be modeling what that is for people or for broken people so that they have a reference. Maybe those people have no reference. Maybe the person that you're thinking of when you posted that has no reference. Or maybe the person that you were thinking of when you LOL'd that had no reference. And so I want to give you these war chest tools because that's what we're going to do each time. And we have a few minutes left. We have about 10 minutes left. And I want to give you these war chest items. And, you know, I'm going to mix in, you know, some for the poster and, you know, the laughers. And I'm also going to mix in some for just everyday people who are dealing with insecurity or dealing with traumas. And so let's start. So how can I stop my insecurities from affecting my life? So the first step, and don't laugh at me because y'all will see a pattern. The first step is to reflect instead of respond. And so everything doesn't need an immediate reaction, right? And so because everything doesn't need an immediate reaction, we have to take a step back and we have to go within. Because if we're honest, when we react like that, we're showing people who don't deserve that part of us our most vulnerable moments. And not everybody, like I said, not everybody deserves that. And yes, your vulnerable moments, even your vulnerable moments, can be ugly. Ugliness doesn't mean just, you know, you're a bad person. Ugliness does indicate vulnerability because, like we said before, that ugliness is a symptom of something much deeper. It's a symptom of an infection. So when we think about it, you know, emotions are fleeting, right? And so quite literally the purpose for those, like those cliches, the whole take a beat and cooler heads will prevail, was because trauma literally changes your brain. And so we have something that's called the alarm system in our brain that gives us a chance to, like, it literally gets us moving, right? And it starts I'm not going to explain this really quickly. So basically you start sweating, you start shaking, and the hairs on the back of your neck stand up because you're getting ready for your fight or your flight, right? And you're like looking around, you're trying to see, like, what do you need to do? Right. And so when trauma happens, we don't even give ourselves a chance to even turn that off because the normal process is that goes off. And then, you know, we process information, but no, when trauma happens, we just start reacting at the same time. And so that literally is an example could be, you know, somebody comes in your house and your alarm starts going off. And the first thing you do is come down with a gun and you start shooting. You don't look around, you just start shooting because you're scared. And you find out that it's just your mom and she forgot the code to your house. And your code could be your trauma. Your code could be your trigger, right? She forgot what your triggers were. Somebody get that. Somebody will get it. And that could be your wife or your husband or your spouse or your mate or your partner. We don't have to gender it, but it could be your partner. And so they forgot your trigger. And so how do you know when you're triggered? How can you control that? It takes practice. I've been working on it for 35 years. So how do we start it? So what emotion am I feeling underneath this anger? Or if you're scared, you know, or embarrassed, or you're anxious, or you're sad, what emotion is what's the most prevalent emotion? And then what are you feeling underneath that? And how often do you feel this emotion? Because if you feel this emotion every single time a similar situation happens, it's not really an emotion. It's a disposition. And there's a difference between a disposition and an emotion because a disposition is a characteristic. Whereas an emotion, like I said, they're fleeting. And so when I think of this meme, what emotion came up for people for the person who posted this and for the people who amended it? Because, I mean, I think to myself, like, were they feeling joy? So what were they feeling underneath that joy? Because they were literally calling out an entire group of broken people. So under that joy, could they have been feeling satisfaction? Could they have been feeling vindication? Could they have been feeling recompense? That's a Leviticus word for you, right? Was it also, you need to figure out, was it the delivery or the person who delivered the message? Because sometimes we can hear things from one person clearly, and it'll cause us, it'll empower us to change. But then we hear it from someone else and we're just completely mad. We're pissed off. So it could be the person. So we have to understand where, like, what's happening? Where is this coming from? And so step two, we need to pursue instead of prune. When you finally understand the emotion and understand your reception of that message, right? You need to understand why and where is this coming from? Like, why is it here and where is it coming from? Because many times we cut the people off, we cut people off before that person has a chance to reveal the purpose in our lives. So that they, like, God hasn't even revealed what this purpose, what the purpose of this person is in our lives, right? He hasn't even had the chance to reveal that. And we're cutting these people off. We're blocking them. I have been the block queen. I can show you my block list. And I'm not going to lie. I haven't unblocked a soul because I decided I'm going to move forward. So I'm just going to block less in my future. I'm not going to unblock. Amen. Pray for me if you think that that's bad. So we need to find the root, right? So emotions, like I said, emotions are fleeting and dispositions are worth the pursuit. So you take the time to get to the root of your disposition and that will lead you to your trauma because that's what we're looking for, right? Because that's how we heal it. We have to find where we're hurting. We have to find the bleed, right? Step three, acknowledge instead of accuse. It's so hard to admit that we did something wrong because before we can ever finish a conversation with someone, we have to acknowledge that it was us in the first place. And then we have to actually vindicate the other person before we ever think about going back to the person to have this conversation. So if somebody does something to you and, you know, you do the right thing, and you say, you know what, can I have a moment to think about this? Instead of going off, right? You say, I'm gonna take a moment to reflect. Is that okay? You cool with that? And you go back and then you think about how you're feeling and you're like, okay, so what am I thinking under this anger? Because the person really just made me angry. All right, so I'm embarrassed. Okay, why was I embarrassed? Because she was talking about, it's because of coronavirus. I can't go out and get a new wig because, you know, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling away about my wig. And so, okay, so that wasn't that. It was, I was embarrassed. So it really wasn't that person. It was me. So that person was really just trying to tell me I had something in my hair. Okay. So it's not her. Okay. So I'm vindicating this person before I even get to her or him. Because when I get to this person, I want to be able to apologize correctly. And so that helps to also model it for other people. So when I go back, I can take, this is step four, I can take responsibility and pay restitution. And what does that mean? It's literally modeling the behavior for them. So you go back to them and say, hey, I just want to say thank you so much, number one, for being patient with me and allowing me space and time to think about some things. I want to say I'm sorry for the way that I almost reacted or the way that I reacted. I see that you were really trying to help me because I did have something in my hair. Girl, I was embarrassed when you came up to me and it really is just, you know, this Rona got me crazy. Like, and you know, a girl ain't been able to go to the hair store. They done shut Rhode Island down. They done shut the city down. They done shut the state down. And so I ain't been able to go to the hair store. And so I was feeling away. And so I almost went off on you, but I just want to say that I'm sorry because I know that you were trying to help me and you came from a good place. Boom. That's restitution. That's paying restitution. That's taking responsibility. And you're teaching something in the meantime. The last step is step five, and you want to triage and treat. When we're going through this healing process, we get so excited about healing that sometimes we try to take on all of this stuff, right? And we try to heal everything at once. But chill out, because everything's going to get its chance. So you want to heal what's really hurting. You want to heal the big bleeders, right? And everything's going to get its chance to be healed. And so when big things are coming up, because you'll notice what the bigger things are. And so you take time and you work on those things. And you work on them as they come. This is a journey. You're not going to get this done in a week. You're not going to get this done by the time they figure out coronavirus. So let's take a moment to step back and understand that we need to take our time. So let's go through these steps one more time, right? So let's reflect instead of respond, pursue instead of prune, acknowledge instead of accuse, take responsibility and restitution, triage and treat. I'm so excited. Again, like I said, I'm so excited that you allowed me to take this hour with you. I feel blessed. I feel honored. I hope you'll excuse my mistakes that I made in this podcast. I feel okay about this one. I'm just going to go ahead and post it. I don't even know how many times I messed up, but I'm going to go ahead and post it. I want you to understand that it takes courage to do what you're doing, and what you're doing is healing. And it takes courage to do it every day. And it takes Joshua type courage to be consistent. And so I want to say to you, be strong and of good courage. And I'll say it again, be strong and of good courage, because you are going to go forth and you're going to conquer this. You're going to suit up and you're going to conquer this. And I promise you, I'm going to be here, because I'm going to keep conquering my fear, and I'm going to keep conquering, you know, my insecurities and everything that I'm going through too, just to be able to come here and give you what God has given me. So we're going to do it together. We'll suit up together. Thank you so much. God bless you. And we will see you next week on With Love Divorce. And remember, it's not With Love Divorce all about relationships or all about divorce, but it's With Love Divorce anything that is going to hold you back. So y'all have a good one. We out. Next week on With Love Divorce, the podcast, we will be talking about toxic masculinity and toxic femininity. This should be a good one. Y'all tune in.